Welcome to the American Ag Network Week in Review for October 27th. I'm Sabrina Hill. In a little bit, I focus on weed management and what you should be doing now. But first, Rusty Halverson had the chance this week to talk with U.S. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue. Here's their conversation.
Okay, Secretary Perdue, can you hear me on that end of the line okay?
You are loud and clear, Rusty.
Okay, you are too. You are too. Well, thanks for your time this morning. Really appreciate it. And just going to touch on a few different topics. I'm an old school farm broadcaster. I've got a live market check at 8:45, so I'll let you go before then, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, Acting EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler telling reporters last week that the EPA has the authority to move ahead on E15 without the help of Congress, and he was hopeful that the oil industry would join the effort to make biofuels function, the policy function better, rather than taking the issue to court. Mr. Secretary, do you share Mr. Wheeler's hope, and do you think we're on track for E15 approval for the summer driving season next year?
Well, absolutely. I share his thoughts on both parts of his comment. I absolutely believe he has the legal authority to do that, the EPA does. And I would ask our citizenry in many areas on policy issues, rather than being litigious, why don't we just decide how we can work together and get along? And I would hope that the petroleum industry would do that regarding ethanol. We think it's, you know, our 10% blend has been around for a long time. It's been well received, and we think the E15 has been around for 9 months out of the year. So we think it's really spurious for the petroleum industry to take to the courts to try to overturn this. We don't think that'll be successful, and we would love to see the petroleum industry come along and say, why don't we have all of the above? We've got wind, we've got solar, we've got ethanol, and we got petroleum. So let's use our bounty of American energy independence to continue.
Absolutely. Now, let's talk quickly about the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. A recent poll by the Angus Reid Institute indicated that Canadian citizens overall are somewhat lukewarm about the agreement. 30% of respondents pleased, 32% suggested they were disappointed. If you had to gauge the reaction of U.S. agriculture to that agreement, what percentages would you have for being pleased with what the U.S. accomplished in the negotiations, and perhaps what percentage might be a little disappointed that we maybe didn't get enough?
Well, again, I think overwhelmingly, I don't know that I can quantify it by digits, but I think overwhelmingly, our stakeholders, our industry, our agricultural constituency has shown overwhelming support for it. I think you probably saw the field in Indiana that was thanking President Trump for the E15, and we think that holds for the trade agreements as well. We need to get these retaliatory tariffs off, and I think when we do that, then it'll be absolutely unanimous as regarding the trade policies of President Trump, making people play by the rules. We know that NAFTA was good for agriculture generally, for the most part. This is an improved agreement that President Trump, just by sheer will and by persistence and grit, was able to negotiate. So we think our agricultural constituents in the kind of the domino effect of Korea, the Mexico-Canadian deal, looking forward to beginning discussions with Japan and the EU, we think we're really reestablishing an amazing trade policy and platform going forward.
Okay. Now, I understand you're going to be in our neighborhood up here in the Northern Plains, a trip to South Dakota. Where are you headed to, Mr. Secretary, and what you up to?
We're going to be in Sioux Falls, and obviously in the E15 decision. I had not actually toured a bioethanol facility yet while I'm in office. I've toured one beforehand, but we're coming to the Poet Chancellor Biorefinery there to really talk about ethanol and E15 and what contribution that makes to the ag economy. Then we're going over to some livestock producers at Poppins Farm to have a round table with producers. My theory is if we're going to be responsible for the ag industry, I need to get out and talk to agricultural producers. I can't get educated in Washington, D.C., so we're coming where the people are. And then we're going to go, as you know, USDA has responsibility for food service in our schools. So we're going to go to Brandon Valley Intermediate School for a school lunch event there with Congressman Christy Noem.
Absolutely. That's fabulous. And I think you'll enjoy your tour at Poet. There are very good people there. And just a final question, Mr. Secretary, speaking of good people, you're asking Congress for a supplemental to help out some of the producers after the recent hurricanes. Have you had a chance to visit with some of your friends back home? How are the recovery efforts going for farmers and livestock producers?
Well, I tell you, it's been tough. The farm safety net programs that we have ordinarily in the farm program don't contemplate this kind of devastation. And unlike many of our row crops, such as corn and beans, we had a lot of damage in generational crops like pecan trees that, you know, that live 30, 40, 50, 70 years. And it's been they've been decimated in some parts, as well as a cotton crop has been blown over, blown out. They're literally where people have had harvested a portion of the field and came back after the 6 hours of wind blowing, and they couldn't tell where they had harvested and where they hadn't. And it was extremely bumper cotton crop. So we do hope that Congress will look at this situation and help those producers who are suffering in timber and pecans, cotton, peanuts, and other crops down there.
Okay. Looking ahead, just to wrap up, Mr. Secretary, I understand that Trade Ambassador Greg Dowd will be in Kansas City for the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. Will you have a chance to come visit this year, or are you busy this year?
You know, I was there last year. I don't know that my schedule is going to allow that this year, but okay. It's always a good group. And the good news is Ambassador Dowd was very helpful in the old USMCA agreement, and he's very well versed in agriculture.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you very much for your time today, Secretary Sonny. We appreciate it. And safe travels. We'll see you on the road somewhere.
Thank you, Rusty. I thought you might want to talk a little football this fall.
Do you want to talk about the Bison a little bit? How's your team doing this season?
Well, LSU kind of humbled us a couple of weeks ago, as you know. But
yeah.
I think we'll have another shot at them. I believe the Georgia Bulldogs will win the East, and we may see Alabama or LSU in the SEC championship.
Well, I tell you what, I love your spirit, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Okay, you bet. You take care, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Again, Rusty Halverson and U.S. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue. We're going to take a closer look at one of the issues that growers deal with on the farm, and that is weed management. We're joined on the phone by Phil Krieg, an agronomy service representative with Syngenta. He's based out of Southern Illinois and is our weed expert for today. Thanks for joining, Phil. On the topic of weed management, as harvest is wrapping up, attention turns to preparing things for next year. So let's talk about keeping fields clean, obviously one of the first steps to weed management.
Yes, one of the first things that growers need to do after harvest is sit back and reflect on those particular weed problems that seem to be the greatest problem for them this year. What were their driver weeds? What farms had some of the worst weed pressure? And how successful was their 2018 herbicide program in controlling those primary driver weeds on their farm?
All right, and let's talk a little bit about the weed seed bank. How long can that survive in a field?
You know, the seed weed bank can survive for a long time in the field, and it is somewhat affected by the various types of tillage that you're going to do. In other words, are you doing conventional tillage where you're doing, a lot of soil movement, soil mixing? Or are you doing a no-till operation where you tend to leave more of those weed seeds on the surface of the soil? And then another thing that enters into that, are you using cover crops? Because we know that some weed species react to competition differently. For example, a good heavy cover crop can sometimes suppress certain weed species, while others, it doesn't seem to affect much at all. For example, water hemp is a good example of a weed species that is somewhat suppressed for a while by a cover crop, delays the germination there in the spring, a little bit of that weed. And so in that, a grower look at what his individual regime is. What is his tillage? Is he a no-tiller? Is he using cover crops? And how that practice will actually affect the germination timing of his weeds next spring, based on where is that weed seed placed in the soil profile by his tillage practices.
I thought it was really interesting you said on the topic of the cover crops that they can delay a weed from emerging, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to keep them down forever.
That is correct. There's a lot of work that's been done with cover crops, many different species of cover crops, and it's been really interesting to look at some of the findings of how the soil, the cover crop will affect things like soil temperature and soil moisture. That soil temperature and soil moisture next spring will be the trigger that will set some weeds into germinating or maybe being a little bit delayed in their germination process based on that soil moisture and soil temperature. So there's a real good cause and effect of the tillage and so forth that we do on how these various weed species will react and how we should plan our herbicide programs accordingly.
So looking at some pre-emergence techniques, how about some soil-applied herbicides? What would you say there?
Soil-applied residual herbicides are really the key to success in today's world of weed resistance. When we take a look at water hemp and Palmer amaranth, which tend to be two of the most concerning weeds to growers, the best management strategy starts with a good residual program even before planting that will combine multiple effective sites of action for that group of weed species that a grower is really, really struggling with. For example, in a soybean program, Syngenta, as per our resistance fighter recommendations, we want folks to start with a application of boundary or broadax at or just ahead of planting, and start that residual program with one of those two products with the plan to come back with an overlapping residual, something like a Flexstar GT or a prefix, about 3 weeks after that first residual product was applied. After that broadax or boundary was applied, come back about 3 weeks later with your next residual so that you layer those residuals in there to never let that water hemp or Palmer get a chance to come up. Once it comes up, that's when the resistance characteristics will begin to kick in with that weed, usually meaning that after that weed gets to about 4 inches tall, we can really, really struggle getting it killed with post-emergent products.
And of course, herbicide-resistant weeds can be just a serious problem for farmers. There are some techniques to use, from what I understand, such as switching up the mode of action or using multiple modes of action. What do you suggest?
We definitely want to always be looking at multiple effective modes of action for our driver weeds, whether we're into corn or whether we're into soybeans. There's another key factor that enters into this site of action and using multiple effective sites of action on the weeds. The second part of that is we have to do our research and we have to understand, when we look at a lot of the premixes that are currently on the market, premixes that we, use commonly, that we have a brand name of, say, for instance, Boundary or Broadax or Prefix, like I mentioned, the other part to this is we have to do our research and understand not only the active ingredient that is in those products, but also the active ingredient load. In other words, I'm applying a product to that soil, and I'm applying it, in pints or quarts or ounces, but what is that really giving me in the active ingredient amount that is really going to go work on my weeds? So I could potentially buy a product, use the proper rate according to that label, but still not necessarily be getting the amount of active ingredients into that soil that I need to really do a good job on my driver weeds.
So there's really a science to this. Is that why it's a good idea to always be working with an agronomist or somebody when you're controlling weeds?
Absolutely. The folks that are operating in your local geography are the experts. We definitely have to stay close to that agronomist, that retail agronomist, that person that's going to be out there helping us all summer long, walking the field, helping us adapt and adjust our programs as needed as the season progresses. One thing about it, Mother Nature does not hand us every year. Rainfall events, temperatures can really fluctuate. And if growers maintain a really good relationship with their local retailers, who also are going to have a really good relationship with companies such as Syngenta, we can all partner, and we can give that grower a heck of a lot of peace of mind when it comes to knowing that he's going to have the best weed control program in place going into the spring. And then we will continue to adjust as needed as the season progresses.
All right. And we kind of covered a lot of ground there. That happens when you're talking about weeds. Do you have any other suggestions for our farmer listeners?
I think it's very, very important right now for us to, like I said, reflect back on 2018, do our research, work with our local retailers and our local agronomists, who are, like I said, working with companies such as Syngenta, start to develop that plan and then put that plan into place. Key ingredient here is using multiple effective sites of action for your driver weeds and taking as much of the pressure off of any post-emergent work that we have to do by using good, effective residual products.
All right, Phil, I want to thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
Once again, Phil Krieg, Agronomy Service Representative with Syngenta from Southern Illinois, with some tips on weed management. This is the American Ag Network Week in Review. I'm Sabrina Hill for Rusty Halverson and myself. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week.